This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm T. Shao-Ik with Sharmila Gunnison and Lim Soo Ann. Now we'll be looking at some updates on the Wuhan coronavirus. So yesterday, the Malaysian government announced that it is halting all immigration facilities, including issuing visas for Chinese citizens from Wuhan and the areas around Hubei province with immediate effect. So what this means essentially is that there is a ban, a temporary ban, on allowing incoming travellers from those areas at Wuhan and the Hubei province coming into Malaysia.
And so Malaysia is believed to be the second country after North Korea to bar travellers from China. So North Korea announced a complete ban on all foreign tourists as early as 22nd of January. And so the vast majority of tourists to North Korea do come from China. And so other countries that have closed their borders to travellers from mainland China yesterday are also Hong Kong, which banned entry of Hubei residents, as well as those from Taiwan and Macau, unless visitors show a medical certificate saying that they don't have the coronavirus, and also Mongolia, which closed its border crossings for auto vehicles and pedestrian traffic.
And other countries are issuing travel advisories for their own residents who are travelling to China. So the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention raised its travel precautions for China on Monday to its highest of three levels, warning. So this means travellers are advised to, quote-unquote, avoid non-essential travel to that particular country.
Yeah, and in China itself, the city of Wuhan is already in effective lockdown as is much of the surrounding Hubei province. Several other major cities around the country have also suspended public transport systems, and this is effectively shutting down the movement of some 20 million people. It is a quarantine measure on an unprecedented scale.
It is, yeah. And, well, no wonder, because the numbers are rising very rapidly. So our last check, as we speak now, 106 people in China have died from the virus, and more than 4,500 people are infected. There are also more than 60 confirmed cases in 17 places outside of mainland China.
The one thing that is spreading faster than the virus, though, is fear. So this is leading to a lot of people calling for stricter border controls to curb the spread of the virus. But the question is, do border controls actually work?
It's funny you should ask that. You know, if we look sort of historically, travel restrictions such as these to control the spread of disease have actually been tried as far back as 1377, and that was during the spread of the Black Death.
Right.
So, you know, a city that tried that out was the Mediterranean city of Dubrovnik. It was then known as Ragusa and is now part of Croatia. They imposed a 40-day isolation period on ships that were suspected of carrying the bubonic plague that were entering the city. That didn't work then. And since then, though, nearly every new pandemic threat that has come, we still try to make efforts to seal borders. So according to an article in Vox, flight bans and travel restrictions have not worked to actually stop the spread of any of these diseases. Not in the case of H5N1 avian flu, not in the case of swine flu either.
Yeah, and if we look at during the SARS pandemic, Canada screened millions of passengers at its airports. This was through the use of thermal scanners and sending passengers who may have symptoms to nurses or quarantine officers for an assessment. So the Canadian government later found that not a single case of SARS was picked up in these screenings. And yet, Canada was one of the countries most affected by SARS. The virus caused hundreds of cases and 44 deaths in Canada.
Yeah. So the Vox article calls these measures a quote-unquote political theatre. At best, they delay the spread of disease, but they don't you know, ultimately impact the number of people who eventually get sick. And at worst, they can cause devastating economic impact. Because of the kind of resources you have to put into carrying out these measures, and could potentially cause harm to the outbreak response as well. So earlier today, I checked in with Dr. Koswee King, a public policy specialist who's currently based in Oxford, to find out more about what the evidence, the public health evidence, shows about the efficacy of border controls.
In short term, shall we? This is ineffective if you do it alone. What I mean is that there is no magic solution to an outbreak. A travel restriction can slow down any spread, but in practical terms, it will not contain any spread in any meaningful way. The World Health Organization is generally not supportive of travel restrictions. It is generally not proven to work according to epidemiological science. And thirdly, very few countries have ever instituted such a travel restriction. Those are the principles of it. Coming to the coronavirus in China, the outbreak is now outside the borders of China. Citizens of other countries are already involved. So a travel restriction on one country only appears to be, well, a bit ineffective, and it could create a false sense of security in Malaysia because we think that we've controlled it and then we would stop focusing on the coronavirus in ways that are meaningful and calm. There's simply no magic solution to an outbreak. We all must play our part, and certainly we cannot reach for easy solutions thinking that it will save us all.
So if you say that this in itself won't work, what else needs to be done?
What else needs to be done appears to be already done by our Ministry of Health. For example, we do have currently the travel restrictions in place, a temporary travel restriction. And other things that are already being done by the Ministry of Health would be border controls at screening level. What I mean to say is whenever somebody comes to Malaysia, especially from countries that have detected the coronavirus, they're going through health screening and surveillance to look at their temperature. We're asking the history of travel. We're asking if they have symptoms. This is crucial in helping to detect those who might be carrying the symptoms or who might have been exposed to people who have been exposed to coronavirus. So that's one specific thing, screening at entry points. Other measures include contact tracing, surveillance, education, including targeted education, isolation, and quarantines where necessary. So you see, all of these solutions as a package can reduce the risk of outbreaks and also to contain Malaysia from outbreaks in other parts of the world. But because viruses have no passports, we must understand that this is not Malaysia's fight against the world. This is our species' fight. Homo sapiens' fight against the virus. And therefore, to do so, borders don't really matter. Border controls might not really matter entirely. We must have a package of solutions, as I've just described.
So there have been concerns that, and there has been cases where some people who've been suspected of having the virus or having some sort of infection don't want to be quarantined or to be referred for follow-up medical attention. And perhaps this could be because they don't understand what are the steps to come after that, right? So perhaps you could provide some reassurance in terms of what happens if you may be suspected of having an infection so that we can calm those fears as well.
There are two words here that perhaps needs a bit of a definition for now. Isolation is when you are confirmed to have the disease and we will have to put you into the hospital and keep you away from other people. Quarantine is when you have a suspicion of having the disease, but you're not confirmed to have this disease. In both the situations, isolation and quarantine, the government of Malaysia have got laws that allow us to isolate or quarantine people who are suspected or confirmed to have that disease. Mm-hmm. And these laws are there for public health reasons so that you don't endanger the health of other people. Leaving that aside, the law aside, what can be done is a careful, keeping up to date with the symptoms as well as the education and announcements that are made by the Ministry of Health's official channel. If we follow the official channels of the Ministry of Health and do so in a calm and rational fashion, we should be able to understand better the symptoms of the coronavirus outbreak and to seek medical attention whenever we need so. So the what needs to be done for people to feel calm and rational and to feel reassured is actually to look at the official channels of communication and to understand that the Malaysian government is doing everything that they can to ensure that the safety of the Malaysians are number one.
Well, calm and rational don't necessarily come in hand when there's a disease outbreak. And one of the calls that you see being made is send them all back to China. What are the concerns about this kind of move?
Well, there are a few concerns about this move, shall we? But perhaps we should start by saying that these are perfectly understandable fears of human beings wanting to secure our own borders and to protect our own home from, in this case, a foreign threat. The foreign threat in this case is actually not from another country, but actually from another species. And frankly, viruses have no passports. They don't operate in a way that allows you to recognize which citizens of which countries that they are. And it's not as easy or as simple or as effective as merely deporting a group of people simply because they come from a certain country. So it is not effective at all if we just blanket deport a group of people just because they come from a certain country. Indeed, one can even say that from a human rights perspective, this is discriminatory. From a legal perspective, it is not legal. And morally, it is perhaps not moral as well. So we leave aside the human rights, the legal and the moral considerations, and to look specifically at the public health and scientific implications of deportation, then the answer is it does not work.
What about what China is doing? Their own domestic controls and lockdowns of definitely Wuhan and certain other areas. Will this be effective in controlling the movement of the virus out of the country?
Well, to answer your question more directly, the answer is no. It probably wouldn't, because there are many people from outside Wuhan City and Hebei Province who have been who perhaps have been exposed to the virus, and we're still uncertain about the incubation period. And the virus is already outside of China in at least 5 or 7 different countries. The facts continue changing as minutes pass by, shall we? So it's a bit difficult for us to quote the most latest up-to-the-minute facts. But the fact of the matter is that the virus is now outside of China, so whatever China does inside their borders is very unlikely to control the spread of it. However, that being said, there are two additional points that are important. The first one is, what China is doing is completely unprecedented in the public health space around the world. Quarantining or isolating a city of 10 million people is something that has never been done before in any part of the world for any disease. So this is really something that the world should be thankful to China for being so courageous and decisive, and in a sense, perhaps taking a hit for the rest of the world. And I think secondly, the disease facts and the evolving science behind the disease will continue giving us new information that helps us make better decisions. So time will really tell whether or not this quite dramatic decision taken by China will actually reduce the flow of the virus outside of China or even within China.
For the residents of the areas that are locked down, how does the government ensure that their health needs are being taken care of?
Sharik, that's a very difficult question to answer, especially because we don't have visibility over what's going on in China right now, given the state of lockdown, as well as the fact that the government is devoting all their resources from the president of China down to fighting this outbreak, and perhaps the communication could be taking a bit of a back seat. You know that Wuhan is building a 1,000-bed hospital. They're trying to do this in a week. They're devoting many doctors and nurses, deploying them from many parts of the country towards Wuhan City. They're also getting the military to be involved as well as mobilizing other state resources, some of which we know of and many of which we probably do not know. But to answer your question more directly, obviously there are two main concerns. Firstly, putting the sick with the healthy inside the city and not allowing them to leave increases the infectious risk to the entire city. Secondly, there is the logistics of bringing in food and providing security, ensuring clean water and electricity, frankly, also ensuring public safety and no breakdown of social harmony. So these are the two major concerns. One is the infectious diseases component. The second concern would be maintaining enough security as well as supplies into Wuhan. It is quite monumental, the task of blockading an entire city of 10 million people. And certainly the government of China, in order to preserve the output legitimacy, is probably doing everything that they can to ensure that the citizens of Wuhan are receiving the best possible care.
So coming back to the individual level then, what are the most basic standard protective measures that we all should be practicing regardless of whatever institutional measures may be carried out?
Individual people in Malaysia and frankly many other countries in the world can do four specific things. The first one is to practice good hygiene. It's not only hand washing, but also washing your face. Because often the disease goes not from your hands, but rather from pores and inside through the mucosa on your face. So washing your hands and then the face is crucial, including proper sneezing etiquette, perhaps into a piece of tissue paper, which is then thrown away rather, or into the crook of your elbow rather than into the open air. Eat cooked food and avoid raw meat where possible. Use masks and hand wash. These are the tips for hygiene, and that's the first thing that individual citizens can do. Mm-hmm. The second thing that individual citizens can do is to reduce movements. Where possible, do not travel outside or even domestically within Malaysia and try to avoid gatherings where there are too many people. That's the second thing, to restrict movements. The third thing is to recognize the symptoms and to go see a doctor if you feel unwell. Therefore, there is no real need to panic, and perhaps not every fever is that of the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. However, seeking medical attention is very important. So the first three is to preserve hygiene, to reduce movements, and to see doctors if unwell. The fourth one is to be very judicious in our use of social media. Spreading false news and rumors is illegal in Malaysia, and we must be very careful about the kind of information that we receive and also share on social media. Where possible, trust only the official sources, for example, the official channels of the Ministry of Health of Malaysia. These are the four protective measures that each of us can take.
So that was Dr. Kaw Swee King, public policy specialist, and he was summarising firstly the known evidence about travel restrictions and border control measures, I mean in the context of whether they are actually effective as public health measures to contain the spread of the pandemic. And, you know, basically what he said was yes, to a certain extent, but it has to be done together with a whole basket of other approaches as well, and that includes, you know, things like surveillance, contact tracing, ensuring that there's targeted education for the people who are suspected to be contagious.
Yeah, and there is a lot of fake news and misinformation going around about the pandemic as well. I think it's going around faster than the actual virus itself.
That's right.
Said that earlier. So just a quick summary of what we do know to date. So China's National Health Commission has said that the Wuhan coronavirus can be transmitted through contact, but also droplets as well. So what kind of contact has not been specified yet. So I think we'll all be keeping an eye on that. So in the meantime, you want to take the standard precautions as with any other infectious respiratory disease. Remember to wash your hands frequently, practice cough etiquette, and don't eat raw or not properly cooked meat.
Also, another point to note, the case fatality rate, which is the number of deaths from the virus, is actually not as high as previous coronavirus outbreaks, for instance, SARS or MERS. So we don't need to start panicking just yet. Even though the number of deaths seem to be high, they are only, I think, currently at 3%, which is still considered quite low. And if you think of many other viruses that are more common or endemic among our population, we just need to have a bit of perspective on that and not alarm ourselves.
And speaking of perspective, it serves to remember also that Malaysia so far has only confirmed 4 cases. On that note also, I think people should remember to only refer to actual updates from our Ministry of Health. And like you said, Shawik, to not buy into the panic, right? And this would be reported by responsible media. So don't rely on random messages that you get from your relatives or that you see on social media. Fact check. Make sure that you, again, go to the Ministry of Health website or their Twitter. They are very sort of vigilant with debunking myths and rumours and providing regular updates.
You would have the latest statistics on what is actually actually happening here in Malaysia.
Mm, and the Ministry of Health is also putting out, like you said, they're debunking some of the fake news that's being spread around, so you'd be able to see. I mean, there's a tendency to say, I'm just forwarding this in case it's true.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You know? You know, continue to share any thoughts you have with us on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast on bfm.my/dailydigest on our BFM app or on Spotify. We leave you now with All Right by Jamiroquai, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.